Hey, and good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for spending your valuable time right here, Brighteon TV, Mini Ice Age Conversations. This is going to be the summer of distraction. I want to try to run through a few events from the volcanic eruptions to the earthquakes, to the declining magnetic field, the ozone depletion, the fish jumping out of the water, and any other excuses. We switch from La Nina to El Nino and the runaway global warming. We've got to tax the planet to infinitum. You can eat sawdust. They're going to go beyond insects to sawdust, and this is going to be a culmination this year, and this summer is going to set the tone to distract you from natural phenomenon and paralyze you with fear, but at the same time try to onset another full set of global agendas to tax the planet, lock you down, reduce your lifestyle. And you know what? The elite are just going to disappear during this time because 2024 is when the real magic starts.
Hello, I'm Dr. Hochzi. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hochzi Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hochzi Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
Thanks for your support of this platform. Use the code BTV at checkout for additional savings. BrighteonStore.com.
With so much of the world's current food supply consisting of dirty, contaminated, genetically modified foods that may have been grown using herbicides and pesticides, increased scrutiny over what you put in your body is of the utmost importance. Even supposedly organic foods found on most grocery store shelves may contain toxic substances, chemicals, and other additives that can be harmful to your health. That's why here at BrighteonStore.com, we subject all our in-house products to extensive lab testing for glyphosate, heavy metals, and microbiology using our state-of-the-art spectrometry equipment to ensure the highest quality of cleanliness and purity. Support your health and this free speech platform by shopping at BrighteonStore.com today.
And welcome back. And again, I appreciate you spending your time, because as we go through these changes naturally on our planet here, as well as what we see with politics and economy, we're all going to have to come together for solutions. And it's not going to be just one single solution that fits all. It's going to be a combination of everybody coming together with different solutions as one way for us to integrate all ideas as the solution. You know, the solution is a misnomer of just one idea, one way to do it. But nobody can really come up with solutions if you don't know the problem. In today's program, I'm not really trying to be Mr. Doom and Gloom. It's more of a show of the power of nature and how do we as a species come together with these solutions. And again, you know, it's going to take a huge amount of thought resources from all of us as ways to move through these changes. I wouldn't say cataclysmic changes, not yet. But that's the distraction. You know, they keep talking about the politics, the things, the CBDCs, the track and trace, the chipping, this, the brain chips in your head and forehead. That may come, but I really believe it's a great distraction for those who are awake. And I just got back from New York City, and one thing I'll say is they don't need to really do much for most of the population to distract. 90%, I'm sorry to say, are sheep that will, they don't even need to be distracted because they're just distracted by the dailies already. So what we're seeing for the aware and the awake are the distraction meant and tailored just for us. The central bank digital currencies are a big one. They're going to have you focused on CBDC when the bull lies and the space debris comes rolling in. So let's start to set up summertime. So from now to the end of the year, it's pretty clear where it's going to go with this readjustment in the movement from La Nina into El Nino and this whole hype of global warming coming back, as well as the volcanic cycle is here again, along with increased earthquakes and seismicity. So, you know, if you haven't been paying attention, this first slide kind of is really sums it up. Diverse earthquakes and volcanoes in almost every continent and country across the planet. Democratic People's Republic of Congo, again, going off. That's one of the largest volcanoes in Africa. Apparently, the actual red glow from the crater and lava spilling out over the side is visible some 65 miles away. That's a long way to see a little bit of red on a volcano. And then we had, you know, down all the South American chain, we're looking at eruptions and across Asia. And where you start to look up in Russia, down into, you know, Japan coming off with the earthquakes. And it just seems that whatever's happening electromagnetically is going to affect, and as we saw in 535, 536 AD, about 1500 years ago, something very similar occurred. There was nonstop volcanic eruptions and nonstop earthquakes for three straight years. And that reduced the world's population. They just couldn't grow food. It was kind of, they called it the sickness in the air period. And you can do a lot of research on that, the Justinian plague, et cetera, going further back in time. So with the amount of volcanoes and earthquakes, this is definitely going to be built into the fear-based control mechanism, the narrative. Volcanoes are a great thing, but there's been this bevy. And this week I went through just mainstream news articles along with my normal research into peer-reviewed research, which not many mom and dads, normies, et cetera, are going to dive into that peer-reviewed research. They're going to stay right on the MSN, the MSNBC, whatever kind of news feed. So I thought I would delve into that for this week and see what was there that overlaps with sort of the distraction. Here it was. I couldn't believe it. The Earth spin is speeding up. They're trying to say that the atomic clock is now matching that. The Earth's core is spinning faster. Something's causing the Earth's core to spin faster. Be very afraid. The Earth's spinning up, speeding. Our days are getting longer by, I don't know, 1/1000th of a second as you go deeper into it, the rotation. And I thought that's really weird. Why would they, you know, tell the entire normal public that there's a rotation difference in our spin right now? We're going to watch this build-in of natural phenomenon into the news feeds. Watch it. It's here already. I was going to say it would be coming, but it's already here. You know, I talked a few months ago about that. It's actually going to need to subtract 1 second now. And, you know, talking about electromagnetic changes across the solar system, this is a picture of Uranus. Now, this was from the Voyager spacecraft. We go back all the way to 1986. This is really the only image they have of the planet. And I thought that's so interesting. You're telling us all the mechanisms and the science has settled for everything that could possibly happen on our planet, yet you only have a picture or so of all of the planets in our solar system. So it's still in its infancy, this thing that we call solar or astrophysics, solar dynamics studies, even Caltech, JPL, you're thinking, wow, they're so advanced. And again, right off MSN, Digital Trends, astronomers spot cyclones on the poles of Uranus for the first time ever. So for me, I'm going, that means electromagnetic activity sweeping across our entire solar system, not just here on Earth, which they would try to have you believe we are driving cars and causing change. Now, the observations are a little bit deeper into the atmosphere, but again, they're not using what we would consider optics to look at these phenomenon. They're using radio telescopes, a little bit different. What you just saw right here, that's an optic telescope off of the spacecraft Voyager 2. 1986, and with, ooh, blue marble, blue glass, so pretty. But the atmosphere is definitely changing the rotation on Uranus as well. Neptune's atmosphere reversed, remember that, a year and a half ago, and Jupiter's aurora glowed 10x brighter than before. So we start to see these changes in the outer solar system, and they're talking about potassium and different types of elements that are changing heat signature in the atmosphere. So what would do that? The sun, absolutely. So this is a radio telescope here, and this is in the United States in New Mexico. This is what they're using to observe the planet. So not optical like you think it is. So, you know, just even that in itself, the portrayal of NASA with all these graphic images, you'd think that was optics, but it's not. And here's another one that making the rounds on the mainstream news right now, MSN again, Jupiter. Now they're trying to explain to normies or just the average unaware person why the stripes on Jupiter have changed and what's the mechanism. And I really dropped my jaw to the drawer when actually I pulled this sentence out at the very bottom so you could see it enlarged there. It has to do with shift in Jupiter's magnetic field. But that's intertwined and interplaying with the sun's magnetic field. So if something is able to change Jupiter's magnetic field at that gigantic, not only distance, but Jupiter, so many much larger times than Earth. So if the effects are between Jupiter and the sun being felt, and we are so much closer, what do you think is happening to our own terrestrial systems here in terms of jet streams and cloud cells? Now, it's interesting that all this is coming out in just the last, say, 10 days in mainstream news. So I really see this narrative pushing for explaining what the unexplainable will be with magnetic field shifts here on the planet. Now, as we come into 2024, I've showed this chart before in a couple of episodes that I've done. Saturn, Jupiter, Uranus, and Neptune are going to form this square in the outer solar system perceived from Earth. The last time it had done this was 79 AD. That's nearly 2,000 years prior. And you can't tell me that now suddenly a magnetic anomaly is expected to occur with the interplay of the magnetic fields of the gas giants and the sun and the Earth sandwiched between those two. And suddenly they're throwing out in the news in the last week that Uranus, oh, suddenly there's storms on the poles. And look, the magnetic field's changing and Jupiter's bands are shifting. Two of those four planets accounted for in magnetic anomalies and shifts, they are absolutely, and I say the mainstream media, is getting ready to announce this, something close to it. They're going to have to explain away the changes. There's too much natural phenomenon going on, even for the average person. Go, whoa, this is way outside the bounds of what CO2 could possibly do. Now, jumping in, the Cassandra X-ray telescope and the James Webb telescope. These are some of the new images that are featured in a few of these stories. So it's almost as if they want you to look deeper into space and actually see the vastness of it. And these images are just stunning. When they overlay the X-ray technologies with the new optics out of the James Webb telescope, I mean, these are mind-blowing images. What we saw before was very hazy, grainy, but look how in-depth they're actually getting on this. I wanted to bring this one out, the Eagle Nebula. I mean, this is, you're looking at creation itself, the finger of God pushing through our physical universe from the energetic. I mean, this base layer that holds our physical universe together of consciousness is constructed right here. And this is running on Birkeland currents on the formation as well. So this is what powers our star, these Birkeland currents, and they run through everywhere stars are being formed. And if there's pearls of stars across what is considered pearl strings, those are all following the same current flow. And this phantom galaxy is kind of a mind blower as well, where you can really see the spiral arm of it, you know, because to try to visualize our spiral arm of the galaxy, it's kind of, we're here and we're looking at a flat plane, you know, you can't really get above or below it to look at it. But this is truly what our own galaxy is very, very close to. And you can see the wispiness and how many hundreds of billions of stars are there. And we're supposed to believe that we're just this little tiny Earth that's disconnected from everything else. The interplay of a galaxy on its own energetic signature and frequency and resonance is something to behold, let alone interplaying of stars are just regions in the spiral arm that are interplaying energetically on something coming, current flow through one galaxy to another, high voltage cables through our universe. And then again, I am so mind blown. Popular Mechanics puts this story out this week as well. Oh, scientists are kind of getting anxious about a pothole in space. Really? Yeah? You can see the trend. You see the trajectory where this is going to get people who are unaware that even there's stars, basically. If you live in the city, you're not going to see the star. The last time I saw people looking up at stars in a city is just like, not really, unless you're in a park somewhere. But they're talking and they're really letting go that there's cycles inbound. Because if you read through the article, it's quite a lengthy article, so I just pulled out a couple nuggets there. It's happened many times in the past. So they're verifying that cycles are built into magnetic activity on our planet, which for me was like, wow. They say even back some 11 million years ago all the way to present that it's been flip, 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 flip. It's a cycle. So they're starting to let on to this cyclicity of things that are moving our planet and, you know, responsible for a lot more than you driving your car or airplanes. And they're also talking about a new region of African low, large shear velocity province, which is above the asthenosphere in our crust. And it has something to do with the molten layers in there aren't moving as quickly. So when they get blocked up and locked in sort of that place and slow down, above that, there's a magnetic anomaly, South Atlantic anomaly. Something below the crust is causing it. But we don't want to talk about that because it's natural. But I think what they're really trying to get at, and, you know, I've talked about the ozone depletion event, the runaway ozone depletion event here. For some time since the Hunkatonga eruption, I knew that was going to be a big one. All that water vapor went up and we had 10% more moisture ejected in the atmosphere in a single event. And I've been following that pretty closely with the ice crystals up in the mesosphere about 30 to 50 miles above us and the breakdown of ozone occurring in there, knowing that this event was inbound immediately, June, July, August, September, October. So we are getting very close to getting into June. But normally, the onset of the in the column where the ozone breaks down and you actually get zero or very little ozone, where that'll just scorch you like a microwave oven, that doesn't occur usually until September, somewhere around there, late September. And then when it gets into October, it kind of reaches that peak and then it starts to taper off and the ozone refills in the column. Well, these are the readings from today on the left. Well, it's actually a couple of days ago. They're always a few days back lagging on the time frames. May 23rd, 2023, the lower that blue is and purples are less ozone in the column, meaning the more blue it goes, the more purple it goes, the more black it goes. That means there's less and less ozone. The higher it goes, you get the reds and the yellows. But I'd like you to compare it. Right over here, May 23rd, 2021, this was before the Hunkatonga eruption. Do you see a difference? The onset is rapid and ferocious this year. And it'll follow the same pattern for a couple more years. So once we get this full year here, under wraps and grasp the early onset and the late outflow of it, it'll probably won't dissipate this year until somewhere way late November, because the temperatures are incredible cold down there right now. The effects on the plant life and the sea life and the insect life and the humans, us, is going to be astounding. And know that the elite and the news are going to run with this story in conjunction with everything else happening as a scare factor to try to push more control over the planet. Now, one, I had a couple conversations and it came out at the end was, you know, what if they take it to the extremes on this news feed stuff with this, saying all air travel needs to stop. There's a runaway event. We need to stop it all immediately. Look at what the damage we've caused. The ozone hole's back again. We need to stop all commerce on the planet. We really mean it this time. It is seriously a climate emergency this time. All commerce needs to stop. We're going to die. That kind of level is what they're anticipating to go to when this ozone hole is 10 times larger than it normally is and way far north toward the equator. But really, that column, look how far up that extends already. Up, if that was over Argentina and Chile at the bottom there already, it's going to swing around the planet. So obviously Argentina and Australia, they're all going to get swept by this very low ozone area. Wait until, let's say, September or August. This is going to be black on the bottom of the planet where there will be no ozone. It's going to be interesting. This is, again, in itself, there's really not historical record for a mesospheric ice crystal eruption like we've had. So it's really difficult to even trace back in the past to find a pattern to match it as something that might be a similar. I just never found one, never. After that eruption, I went through, you don't know how many hours of research, really, like thousands, going through everything I could possibly read about it, using ChatGPT to figure it out, jumping into all the peer-reviewed research, looking at all the volcanism, past volcanism, because I already had a bunch of that stuff anyway. But I just couldn't find any similarities. This Hunga Tonga eruption right here. It was January of 2022. Now, this is an all-encompassing thing. You know, they were saving this on the back plate for a fear-based thing. So with the ice crystals up there and with the extra water vapor, you would expect that there'd be anomalies at the Antarctica first, in the Antarctic Peninsula Circle area, and then it would come further north up toward the equator. Now, this is today's. I just pulled this before the program. This is a forecast for May 31st. And originally I thought, that's impossible. I think that's an error. Because when I looked at this map, I was like, that's got to be an error. It can't be that cold down there. June 1st is when they actually start autumn in the Southern Hemisphere. And I thought this was a mistake. And I was like, maybe I'm going to write them and tell them that their model's off, that it can't be this cold this early. That's a mistake. This is 30 degrees Celsius below the normal temperatures. Already down there. That pink and light pinks, that's off the chart. That's how cold it is already. And they're not even in winter yet. So can you imagine when the really cold winter temperatures come, they're going to be breaking every record ever set in Antarctica for cold temperatures this year. Now, how does that dovetail into a catastrophic ozone depletion event? So I thought, you know, I really thought the model was wrong here, because I'm looking at these kind of temps, that's impossible. Really, it is impossible. That's like saying that there's an Arctic front and the temperature dropped 80 degrees Fahrenheit and everything froze in the middle of July in the United States in the grain belt. That's kind of the same equivalent when I was looking at this chart. And then I moved forward the models and I thought, okay, maybe it was a broken day or two, and if we move forward a little bit, it'll correct itself. That wasn't. This is really the temperatures down there, because I rechecked it on Windy and a couple others as well. So you're looking at that bottom there. That's all of the Antarctic continent that they do have for visible here on the temperatures. They're already running away into extreme cold. So something has definitely broken here. And I was looking at the sea surface temperature models here too, because I wanted to talk about how El Nino and La Nina are going to be used also. Now, that's kind of base layer number one, actually two. You get all of the celestial phenomenon as the base layer. Then we put on top all the running ozone depletion event on top of that. So now we got two base layers. Now, the third layer of distraction that's coming in the summer will be this movement from La Nina into El Nino, and the El Nino is going to cause a heat spike. Obviously, if the oceans are warmer, they're going to warm the atmosphere. But the thing is, that's a cycle as well. So they're going to start to say, catastrophic runaway global warming again. Well, yeah, we're coming into an El Nino once more. But the reason I have this chart here is I was trying to back up what I saw on that previous chart of absurdly cold temperatures. I was like, if it's that cold, water is going to reflect that. And when I say that, if there's that much cloud cover and it's really that cold, the surface temperatures of the water are going to be cooler also. So I pulled the chart here. This is off NOAA. Anybody can find this, 50 kilometer global. And look how blue it is down there. Cold. So water is actually verifying that extreme cold event over Antarctica. The water temperatures are starting to push that as well as like 2.5 to 3 degrees Celsius below normal water temperatures on the sea surface now. But mainly what I was focused on when I really pulled this chart first, also to, you know, two birds, one stone, I wanted to verify the cold over Antarctica, but I also look at that off of South America, that dark blue little wavy line there, that is the end of La Nina dissipating. So as it comes into the warming, oh my, the global warming headlines for this summer are going to make you sick to your stomach. It's going to be all encompassing, never ending. And there's two more layers of distraction to go for the summer, and then you can see how it'll build into one giant control device to get governments to act because they haven't, because there's been too much pushback from the knowledgeable public. But how's that really going to wind out in our world is the question. They're really talking about stopping all commerce on the planet, not because the planet's going to run away because of any human caused. It's because all these natural cycles are culminating and dovetailing and overlayering and interlooping on themselves that gives the perfect distraction and narrative for complete and total planetary lockdown. Talk about that when we come back from the break. See you then.
Hello, I'm Dr. Hochsi. Men, when things hit the fan, don't be crying in the closet with your wife and daughters. They're counting on you to lead them and to be a man who's physically fit, mentally sharp, and spiritually strong. At the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center, this is what we help you become. God has given your body amazing restorative powers to heal itself. We're in the business of transforming lives naturally. We've developed an 8-point treatment regimen, which includes healthy eating, vitamins and minerals, and hormone replacement, including testosterone. Become the man God wants you to be. Our program for men will help you put a tiger back in your tank so you can protect your family during these trying times. Contact us at the Hochsi Health and Wellness Center for a complimentary wellness consultation. Get your energy back so we can take our country back.
Ohio Brett here, host of the Ohio Brett Show for God, Country, and Sports on Brighteon.tv. Brighteon.tv, the fastest growing streaming TV network in the world. And the reason why it's so important, because the Lord is using us to get truth out to we the people. Center left, center right, we're uniting like never before. Blacks, whites, Asian, and Hispanics, all uniting on Brighteon.tv. Brighteon.tv. We'll see you soon.
Your own government has the power to activate a kill switch on all telecommunications, instantly shutting down all private phone calls and texts. An EMP weapon or solar flare can achieve the same result. Rolling blackouts or permanent power outages will also take out the power supply to cell tower antennas, rendering mobile devices all but useless. During these emergencies, how do you stay in touch with the important people in your life anywhere on the planet? The answer? Is the Bivy Stick at SAT123.com. The Bivy Stick is a two-way satellite text messaging device that uses a satellite constellation, not cell towers, to send and receive text messages. It works anywhere on planet Earth, including in war zones or blackout areas. In unpredictable times, the Bivy Stick helps you stay connected when it matters most. Visit SAT123.com to get one while they're still available.
And welcome back. Thank you for joining me for the part two of our hour here. Many Ice Age conversations, Brighteon TV Uncensored, every other Friday, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. David Dubine here trying to make some sense of the world's politics and how it's going to be bent to lock the planet down and stop all commerce. You see, when they stop all commerce, it'll make sense to you why the supply chains were broken and couldn't be functional anyway. So, you know, as we were moving forward, regardless of any of this natural phenomena were to take place, they were going to have to try to explain away. And when I say them, I'm talking about banking and, media interests. We're going to have to try to explain away why the supply chains were completely dysfunctional and there was very few goods coming any longer. Now, could they admit the dollar was no longer wanted and people didn't want dollar trade and all these other countries started trading amongst themselves and America's been firewalled off? That's a hard one to sell to the Western nations. But there was going to have to be an excuse why our supply chains are non-functional and why goods are drying up. global cataclysm, a little bit better excuse than, hey, the dollar's not longer wanted. And by the way, our enemies just quit sending us everything. Not my enemy. Political enemies have made up this, that, or the other for resources. Oh, by the way, we won't have any rare earths. What are we going to do? The excuse had to be built in, but now they can do like six birds in one stone. Because in the beginning of the hour there, I was talking about the celestial phenomenon, the planets with magnetic fields and Uranus and Jupiter behaving strangely again. 2 years ago, they behaved strangely. And then we have all of the cooling temperatures and runaway ozone depletion event, which will also, you know, they can run with this a million ways from Sunday. So the next thing that's going to be added in, so part, you know, caveat number three or level three of this build in for the excuses in the global lockdown, they're going to try it. So you should get ready for that. Now, whatever you have in your nation is what you have in your nation, but it looks like this is going to be the major push for a complete and utter global lockdown of all trade, all commerce, all economy, all travel through the summer, during summer high season. So, you know, just before the break, I was talking about this last map here, and right in the center where you can see my mouse moving, hopefully, just off South America, we have the areas of, they call it Nino areas. And here I'm going to put the little map for you. You can see it at the bottom. So you got Nino 4. Now, remember that one's way out near Indonesia. And then you have sort of the Central Pacific area, and that's the Nino 3.4 and Nino 3. But the ones that are really pertinent to look at is going to be Nino 1 and 2, because that's right at the coast of South America. And as these water temperatures change, this is the difference between La Niña and El Niño, just depending on how warm those temperatures get. And it's all about the pressure and the convection difference between those areas over Indonesia and those areas over South America. It's really, that's the easiest way to explain it. Higher pressures, lower pressures. Upwelling from deep ocean brings that water up and cools. Higher pressures push it down. More warm water stays circulated at the top and it just heats. It's a time immemorial cycle. And this drives air temperatures on our planet, a natural cycle. So here's your map on the bottom. We're going to focus on the red areas there, Nino 1 and 2, mainly for this. This is not a temperature map. This is a sea surface map. Now, when the water gets a little bit warmer, it expands ever so slightly. And here we're looking really at millimeters of expansion. So when you look on this, you're looking at about 100 millimeters, which is 4 inches, all the way down into where the greens are, which is, I mean, maybe a tenth of an inch at best. But you're really looking at those ranges. It's nothing gargantuan. It's nothing like, wow, sea levels. It does this on a pattern itself. So rising 4 inches and shrinking to nothing. And this is how this cycle works. Now, the latest here from April 24th, again, they do this on a monthly. There should be another one popping out pretty soon here. But it is starting to show that the waters are expanding, which indicates the onset of an El Nino, and that cooler water from La Nina has finished for its cycle for now. So again, I'll put the conversion for those of you in the States that don't use metrics. 100 millimeters is 3.93 inches. Not a lot, but it's enough to get a forecast out for El Nino, that the water's changing and for sure the Earth's temperatures are going to change. Upward air temperatures based on the Pacific water temperatures. So this is a well-known cycle to the point that traders and commodities brokers use this with regularity, and they have since what, the 1930s, to understand thunderstorm and rainfall patterns across the grain belt, mainly corn belt here in the United States. When we come into an El Nino, it's a moister, it's wetter, it's more humid. Thunderstorm activity generally takes that track across our grain belt, so we get more rainfall and we get higher crop yields. The inverse for the La Nina, which we've had three La Ninas in a row, and there's only one other time all the way back into the early 1800s where we've had three La Ninas in a row, which meant drought, 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 and drought. And then we had that mega drought across the center grow belt for wheat and corn in the United States. Well, that's going to flip and change. We're going to get more moisture coming in with this El Nino. So grain traders are already looking at this. I've been reading the boards everywhere. They're like, yeah, it's going to come in. That mega drought that's in the middle of the United States that crushed wheat production to a 100-year low in America. 100-year low in wheat production in the United States because there was so much dryness in that area. Is now going to alleviate, and we're going to start to get more moisture there just based on this pattern. It's a well-known pattern for stock traders and grain traders. Obviously, I don't see how the climate people couldn't pick it up and understand it's a natural cycle, unless they were not picking it up on purpose, because they pretty much lied to you on purpose by not allowing you to know that it's a natural cycle. So what does this chart here say? U.S. Midwestern Corn Belt summer temperatures. Focused on the grains again. It's all about the food. If you can't feed a population, you don't have a civilization. So the modeling of the CMIP, which we'll look at here, SIMP6 and SIMP5, the model runs comparatively to what even runaway heating NOAA has shown us. The disconnect from reality is gargantuan here. So when you look at models like this, an overestimation of anywhere between what, 4 and 6x, you know there's a problem. Now, how are they going to run with this model trend here in the future? First of all, we need to know what CMIP is. It's the Coupled Model Intercomparison Project, and it's 134 climate models. So when you hear everybody around the world goes, the models, the model runs. We know the thing. The science has settled. It's the models told us. Version 6? Really? If the science was settled way back at version 1, why do you need a version 6? If the rollout and movement to renewables is all-encompassing, why didn't we do it already? Oh, it's cost prohibitive and takes too many minerals, so it means it would never be done, because if it was that easy to do, it would have been done 20 years ago. You can't tell me we need all these rare earths and we need all these things that we can't even get in our country or refine to produce it, and then we're going to pull out and close down all of our power plants to put solar panels and windmills everywhere. It would have been done already if it could have been done. Same thing here. Science is settled, but we need version 6 to refine it even more. I thought you knew everything already. Way back in the 90s. Oh, wait. Don't ask. That's inconvenient. So they have 53 modeling centers around the planet here. Each country, or you know, sets of countries will take it and be like, we have the best model. But they run about 100, and let's say 130, you don't have to say 134, 130, and they run through and they get the averages and they post them. And this is what every single climate policy is based on, is this models. So how close do you think the models are to reality? I showed you the one with this one right here. It's off by orders of magnitude on what CMIP6 is running versus what NOAA, which runs hot anyway, is showing you. So let's take a look here. This is 68 model simulations. The black line is where we really are. That means that only one out of all of those was even close. One. The blue line, which really doesn't show you. You'd have to dig down further in the peer-reviewed research to see what the blue line is. I didn't want to take the time. I thought the visual would give it to you. This average sea surface temperatures, I thought they could forecast it out. I guess not. This is the kind of thing we're up against here. The science is definitely not settled. It's changing by the second. And for them to come out with a full news bevy of, you know, look at the stars, magnetic fields of all these planets are changing, and then suddenly talking about a pothole in our own Earth's atmosphere, yet they think they have the science settled. They don't. It's not. It's settled enough to try to set policy to control humanity. That's what it's set for. It's not set for realization and real anything for our climate systems. It's a set policy to lock you down for the rest of your life and turn you back into a serf and reset the system again. Now, it baffles me. Like flying, when I went up to New York City last week, I had some meetings up there, and I flew from Tennessee here, and I flew up to New York. And like 90% of the journey was just farms, national parks, farms. And it's just like a huge amount of open space. And then you started coming in once we got toward New Jersey, and then it was just building. I was like, wait, and they're talking about the planet being overcrowded. why don't you just move everybody from the cities and equally space them? There would be so much extra space. Everybody would get 5 acres. I'm sure you could grow food there. I digress. Sometimes I rant. Sorry. Let's go back. No, El Nino 1 and 2. Remember I showed you that map, Nino 1 and 2. That is directly next to South America. Heading out into the Pacific, into the central regions, which are 3.4 and 3. And then way over to Indonesia, which is Nino 4. So the red is the El Nino cycle. And the blue is La Nina cycles built in since 1950. And this goes way back. You can go back into the 1850s and get these charts. I thought the most relevant, though, was what NOAA was putting out for Nino 1 and 2 in the last, say, 70 years. It's a good comparison of time. So if you look at the far edge of the chart there, they have it screaming northward already of water temperatures coming up some 2 degrees Celsius, although it's not verified yet that the El Nino has kicked in. But nonetheless, if you take the spikes in the 1980s to 90s and the 2000 spike and you start to connect these data sets. This is from Dr. Roy Spencer. This is the April temperature set from the lower troposphere. You'll start to see that it is warming slightly, a little bit, probably 0.15 degrees Celsius. But notice what happened. The last, say since 2021, it went below the 30-year average for temperatures, below the 0 point. You never heard about that on the news. And it ran like that. How many times did it dip below the 0 point? The 30-year average, everybody's screaming, it's going to warm 2 degrees Celsius. We got to keep it below 1.5. Okay, you already did. Look at that temperature set. You're below the zero mark. You're way already solved that problem. Come on. 3 years in a row, it dabbled around that area, staying at the low, at the 30-year averages that everybody's trying to say, it's going to run away. Okay. So that now you're gonna, I'm going to mesh these two charts here for you, and it'll be so clear to see how this is going to be used as another step three of the narrative. Okay, so I put the things in the yellow circles. Top left is that bevy of cooler temperatures that run at the zero mark on the 30-year average. And the Nino 1 and 2 La Nina, do you see the time frame matches with global temperatures? So that blue, cooler ocean surface temperatures across the entire Pacific, and it was one of the coolest La Ninas ever recorded, and it was three La Ninas in a row, which is unheard of. But you can see how global temperatures responded to that. There is a very clear correlation on how El Nino and La Nina build into global temperature sets. So now using that as a basis, going, all right, well, that's very understandable. What happens when that temperature rises? Well, look at the spikes that I put the arrows there. If we go back into like 1988, 89, in the mid 90s, you can see that temperature spike runs right with that hot spike in the El Nino temperatures. But then it was just barely even above the zero baseline 30-year temperature averages. And if we look over at the 1999 spike where it says 2000 on the chart below in Nino 1 and 2, that's that same heat spike. Well, look how vast and large the El Nino was, but look at the global temperature spiked at the same time. Now, if it did it once, I could say, well, that's an interesting factoid. If it did it twice, you'd say, oh, that's a little interesting. But when it happens every single time, you go, hey, that's a pattern. Hey, those are related. And then we got the latest ones here from, you know, the late 2016, 17, 18 era, and that's the spike. Now, I put the question mark there because I'm really not sure. It looks like it's eclipsed that already, so there'll be a little bit of delay in lag time, about a year, maybe less, 8 months. That'll put us right into the end of the year, won't it? But as these temperatures start creeping forward throughout the summer, they're going to run with this global warming narrative once again. But please remember, it's all based on ocean temperatures. And you can see that last spike is spiking up, and it looks like it's equivalent or even eclipsed already that 2016-17 spike. 18 spike. Now, with that knowledge, you know, that's going to be layer three there that they're going to run with. Now, layer four is going to be heating oceans. Heating oceans. And just luckily, this last month, in April, at the end of April, a major breakthrough, 19,000 undersea volcanoes discovered, uncovered using new imaging technologies. Okay, if we have an enormous amount of volcanoes going off on the planet's surface above the water that we can see, if there's some 47 volcanoes erupting today as we look at it around the world, what do you think's happening subsurface? You think they're going to erupt and heat the water under the ocean? Deep ocean, mid-ocean, near surface, Japan, for example. Now, I'm going to read that loud at the bottom. It says, a team of oceanographers mapped 19,000 previously unknown undersea volcanoes. Now, that is adding a huge amount into the knowledge database there. But here is what's most interesting, which could improve ocean current modeling, submarine navigation, comma, what do you think the third thing would be? Ocean temperatures. Because with this new discovery of all these volcanoes, and then, you know, the article is quite good. I really like the Watchers. That's one of my favorite sites. Go check them out. If you're into a consolidator for, you know, extreme weather on the planet, that's what they do. And really great site. I like to look at it. And within the article, they actually linked out to the peer-reviewed research, global distribution and morphology of small seamounts. And I'm one of those guys who clicks those links every time. This is off AGU. And once it comes from AGU Earth Sciences, yeah, that's a goodie. It's open to the public. You don't have to pay for it. You can just click and go on the PDF. So look at all the seamounts. What they did is they went down the tectonic plate areas on either side and just started mapping out all the different volcanoes and seamounts that are there. So this has not doubled or tripled the amount of knowledge that we have of seamount locations under the, you know, under the oceans. This is something like 10 times more. So now, do you think the global warming crowd could start to add this into their models now that they have 19,000 more data points for global heating and ocean heating? Oh no, it can't. The Guardian, right on top of it. The fish have been breaching for months now. New Zealand's marine heat waves, a warning to the world. What do you mean? That right there? That is north and west of New Zealand. All those seamounts that have just been discovered that are erupting nonstop under the ocean. You mean that has nothing to do with the heating oceans around New Zealand? I didn't think so. It's you and your SUV, bro. Quit driving it. Walk, take a camel, why don't you ride a mule up to Virginia or something? It's kind of the messaging. Oh, wait, you're not going to be allowed to travel. Sorry, I didn't even think about it. You're going to have to eat sawdust. Something like this. And then AFP, which is Associated Free Press, AP, dangerous slowing of Antarctic ocean circulation or sooner than expected, slowing down by 40% by 2050, as models suggest the overturning circulation. I just showed you how off their models are. It's staggering that they can still get away with these lies and these half-truths to push agendas. Staggering, truly is. So they're saying, well, the ice is going to all melt and run away, and it's going to pour into the oceans, and it's going to disrupt circulation. Okay. And then I read it, you know, if you get down to the bottom, it says read more, and there's other nuggets down there for your mind. Recorded ocean temperatures, or I should say record ocean temperatures, put Earth in uncharted territory. Well, I showed you the maps where the ocean temperatures weren't really running away. They were blue. Remember that chart in the beginning of the hour there? A melting Antarctic sea ice predicted to cause a rapid slowdown in the Earth. Okay, there's the chart I was referencing. Where's the record heating oceans? From that on the left, I don't see it. Pure fiction from The Guardian. Might as well be put into the children's stories, The Guardian. It's pure fiction. Look at that. That's not ocean runaway heating. What? Most of it's blue. Half the world's oceans are below normal temperature. Guardian, I'm disappointed. You know how a parent might say to their child if they do something, they're like, oh, I'm just disappointed in you. I really am. That's just disappointing journalism. Seriously, disappointing. Copernicus, oh, this is off Windy that I pulled this one just before the show to try to validate that, yes, that blue around Antarctica, that is below freezing. That is going into ice formation a month early for this Arctic or Antarctic sea ice. But these runaway heating oceans, according to The Guardian, you're looking at it. And again, this is staggering. this is an over, this is the temperatures down there. And if you look over, you know, if you look directly below Madagascar and South Africa, you come into that sort of brownish, it's not even pink anymore. These temperatures are so low, they're off the chart. Windy doesn't have a low enough figure for this in their charts. Their charts peg at, you know, 5 degrees Fahrenheit below zero. These temperatures here are well into the 40 Fahrenheit below zero. But this early in the year, that's, again, it's unheard of, unprecedented. And they haven't even readjusted their charts for that kind of cold yet. That's how rare it is in these model runs. And when I'm just talking about dailies here for Windy, for example, which is one of the best ones on the planet, windy.com, and you can go do your own research. I encourage you to do so. But look how the narrative's going to build into super scare factor. Everything's your fault. Global warming's running. All these things are happening. Natural, blah, 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 blah. And you know, we need to lock the planet down. This is what's coming this summer. So get out the beach chair, break out the umbrellas, martinis, when you watch this stuff. Bye for now. See you next time.